for Canon's bodies is 1.6 times. That is in contrast to pretty much every other APS-C body out there, which applies at 1.5 times. But that's kind of roughly the same. It has a new 45-point AF system. They're all cross-type. It's pretty broad coverage across the field of view as well. Shoots at 7 frames per second. It does 1080 at 60p with very confident continuous AF inherited from the 70D. Fully articulated touchscreen. Doesn't do 4K. Very good Wi-Fi remote control with your smartphone. So it's kind of, it builds upon the original appeal of the 70D, which was to deliver this kind of ultimate hybrid experience. Normally, the benefit of a DSLR is the optical viewfinder. The fact that there's no lag on it, minimal blackout time when you're doing continuous shooting and panning, very easy to do sport, follow fast action with it. But equally, it consumes very little power, the optical viewfinder. You know, it doesn't become noisy in low light, all of those benefits that it has over electronic composition. But traditionally, DSLRs have not been so good in live view or for movies, especially in terms of continuous AF. So with the 70D, Canon developed dual pixel CMOS AF, which we're going to talk about in a lot of detail, which basically solves the problem. It does it extremely well. So now with models like the 70D and now the 80D, you've got the benefit of an optical viewfinder if you want to shoot in a kind of traditional DSLR mode, but switch it into live view or movie mode and you've got as good continuous AF as any mirrorless system. It's as good as, say, the Sony A6300 for movie AF. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. It's a hybrid camera.
All right, so let's dive into the autofocus system, because I think both you and I are fans of this dual pixel technology that Canon developed a while ago. As you say, it's with DSLRs, this is something that's only available in live view and video. It's not available when you're in the normal mirrored DSLR mode for still pictures. But describe it again in general. We've talked about it before, but also then how is this camera, how does it perform with autofocus?
Okay, well, let's start off with autofocus through the viewfinder. The earlier 70D had a 19-point all-cross-type viewfinder AF system, but it was only sensitive to light levels of minus half EV, which in modern terms is not that impressive. Most cameras are now focusing in lower light than that. And Canon has traditionally fallen behind Nikon, or Nikon, as you would say, in terms of the sophistication of their AF systems. And throughout this review, feel free to make comparisons with the Nikon D7200, which I have, if you're watching the video, in my other hand here. I've got the 80D in one hand and the D7200 in the other. And you can tell when you look at the upgrades on the 80D over the 70D that Canon did have their eye on the D7200. And they thought, not only do we need to upgrade the 70D, but we need to make sure those guys over at Nikon don't have the upper hand in every respect. So they equipped the viewfinder AF system on the 80D. It has gone up from 19 points on the 70D to 45 points on the 80D. And importantly, it's quite a broad array. Now, the D7200 has a 51-point AF system through the viewfinder, so hardly, you know, it's only got a few more AF points. It's a fractionally wider coverage across the frame, but not much in it. Now, this is very important because previously, compared to the 70D AF array was quite narrow, you know, focused around the center of the frame, quite coarse. It was only 19 points. Now, the 80D is pretty much matching the density and the coverage of the D7200. The sensitivity in low light has gone to minus 3 EV. That's the same as on the Nikon, but that's a big upgrade over the minus half EV of the 70D. So this camera will focus much more confidently in low light with the viewfinder. I should also say, importantly, all 45 points of this AF system are all cross-type, whereas on the Nikon, only, I think, 15 of them are. Yes, that's correct. 15 of them are cross-type on the Nikon. All 45 of them are on the Canon. So that's another benefit that it's got. And this is the thing. When you're composing through the viewfinder and you've got it set to autofocus continuous and you're shooting at 7 frames per second with the viewfinder AF, it's really good. It's very confident. It'll track action very, very well. The Nikon, some people may say, I would say that the D7200 and other Nikon bodies with the 3D tracking, it's slightly better at doing its tracking, but there's not a lot in it. You'd really have to have them side by side, exactly the same subject, proper test conditions to go, you know what, I think that one has a slight edge. If you're just using them in isolation, I don't think you would have complaints with either of them. They're both shooting really confidently. But where the Canon really takes the lead is with its live view and movie AF. Now, we've seen Sony kind of take the lead in embedding phase detect AF points onto their sensors on their mirrorless cameras. And what phase detect lets the camera do is better predict which way to start focusing. So there's none of this, should I go forward, should I go backwards? It knows what direction to go in, and it knows when to stop. So there's less of the hunting. It's much more confident. So Sony's solution is to just basically scatter lots of these phase detect AF points over the sensor. And as a consequence, when it's generating an image, it actually has to interpolate around those points. Fujifilm has a cluster in the middle. Olympus experimented with the EM1 with some phase detect AF points, but only for older four-thirds lenses. So lots of people went down that route. Canon went a completely opposite way. With dual pixel CMOS AF, it went, you know what? I wonder if there was some way that we could magically turn the pixels on the sensor into phase detect AF points, but then turn them back again into imaging pixels when we want to take the picture.
And there'd be every one of them, every pixel.
And it can do it. Now, they could. You might say, well, does that mean that it's got 100% coverage over the frame? For some reason, on the 70D and the 80D and the 7D Mark II, which also has it, they only cover 80% of the frame. I don't know if there's a technical limitation to this. Who knows? But either way, that's still pretty impressive coverage. So 80% of that sensor can turn itself into phase detect AF, confidently track and lock onto something, and then turn itself back into an imaging pixel to take the picture. And the end result is a system that just focuses as quickly as a dedicated mirrorless camera in live view. So that's why I say it kind of gives you the best of both worlds. And while you give me your opinion on this, Doug, I'm going to actually try and fire up the 80D and show you this in action. So tell me what you think about that.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's great technology. Again, I want to make it clear to everybody that the difference, this is one of the big differences between a DSLR and mirrorless, in that this technology that we're discussing is only available in live view mode or in video. In still mode, you're still using the dedicated separate autofocus sensor. Okay, so now we're looking at, oh, what a good looking guy.
Oh, thank you very much. And you'll notice the face detection as well. You'll notice it tracking me in live view here. But when I half press the shutter release, see how quickly it focuses.
Yeah, very good.
I mean, it's instant. It's pretty much instant. That is like you're using a dedicated mirrorless system, like a, you know, like a Panasonic or an Olympus or something like that, to show you in contrast, literally in contrast, because the Nikon uses a contrast-based AF system in live view. So I'm going to switch it into live view and turn it around, show you, there I am again. Now watch this. There, do you see the difference?
Yeah, well, you could see it hunt. You could see it go in and out just a bit.
So it hunted, and it was like 2 to 3 seconds to focus, as opposed to almost instant on the 80D. So that is the benefit. Now, if you're shooting a static composition, like today, for example, just earlier today, I was shooting my test scene in Brighton with these two cameras. Camera's mounted on a tripod. It's a static landscape scene. I always use live view to eliminate any potential calibration issues with the viewfinder AF. Both of them allow you to zoom in and really confirm that focus. And the difference between a split second and 3 seconds in that environment, it doesn't matter at all. What matters is that it's absolutely pin sharp. But if you begin to actually shoot people, portraits, street, you know, with the screen in live view, then you really notice the difference. You're not going to do it with the Nikon, because once it's going zip, 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 got it, they've gone. Well, they've moved. And then it's still zip, zip, zipping back and forth. Whereas the Canon is doing it, and it's importantly, it's not just doing it for single AF, it'll do it for continuous AF as well.
Yeah, now let's point out something though. Comparing to, we're saying that it's almost as good as mirrorless. And I'll tell you the problem I have with it. With video, it's fine. But if you're doing live view in still mode, think of what has to happen when you press the shutter. Because the shutter is open, the mirror is up. You press the button. Yes, it autofocuses quickly. Now, the shutter has to close. Now, this is true on a mirrorless too, for the most part. The shutter has to close. The lens has to stop down. The shutter has to open, make the exposure. The shutter has to close. It goes through all these gyrations. So the question is, if you're shooting in live mode, if you're shooting stills in live mode, how responsive is it? And is it, you know, what's the frame rate if you're in live mode? What's the continuous frame rate like?
I'm glad you asked me all those questions, Doug. Let's find out.
Hey, if it were easy, Gordon, we wouldn't need you.
All right, so here we go. Are you ready?
Yep.
That's in live view. So did you hear it going?
Yeah,
click,
do it.
Click,
do it again. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad. because it can kind of, I believe what it's doing is it's not flipping the mirror back up and down. It is kind of maintaining a live link with the sensor. So, I mean, obviously it was a lot noisier. I'm going to do it closer to my microphone so you can hear it. That's in live view. If I take it out of live view, okay, now let's hear what it sounds like just if you're shooting normally.
Now, see if
it's only a little bit quicker, actually.
Yeah, it sounded just maybe it was closer to your mic, but it sounded a bit louder when it wasn't in live view. It's probably just the proximity.
The live view. No, you're right.
Oh, because the mirror has to go up and down.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. I should also, for completeness, let's have a listen to the Nikon. So this is with its viewfinder AF in continuous high. That's 6 frames per second. So the Canon does actually have a little advantage. It shoots at 7 frames per second. The Nikon shoots at 6. The Nikon will shoot at 7 if you apply its 1.3 times crop mode. But if you're shooting with a full frame, it doesn't. Now, if I put the Nikon into live view.
Remind us again which camera that is.
This is the Nikon D7200.
Okay.
Well, it's got to focus first. Here. You hear that?
Yes, I do.
So it's lolloping along. It is doing it, but it's lolloping along compared to the Canon. So the Canon is giving a more responsive live view experience. And again, you're right. It's not quite as responsive or quite potentially as quiet as a dedicated mirrorless camera, but it's pretty good. You know, I mean, we're dealing with compromises here. It is on one hand, a DSLR. It is a DSLR at its heart, but it is performing very well as a live view camera. And that's its premise. I mean, if you don't want to watch the rest of this video, well, and you should watch the rest of this video or listen to the podcast because it's fabulous. But if you don't, I mean, that is the key thing about the 80D and the 70D before it is that it's giving you kind of the best of both worlds. So if you want to be able to shoot with an optical viewfinder at a reasonably high frame rate and track action, it'll do that. But if you also want good movie AF and a good live view experience, it'll give you that as well. And that's what makes it stand out against most of its competition. Although, as we'll see, there are some compelling options within Canon's own range.
Now, you and I test these cameras in live view. I'm going to bet, and we're going to hear about this in the comments, I'm going to bet that relatively few people ever use live view with their camera. The normal mode with the DSLR is to pick it up and start taking pictures. And live view is, well, first of all, of course, you lose the optical viewfinder. So you're only looking at the back of the camera. Now, this camera does have the fully articulating screen, which helps. But I'm going to bet that the majority of people who have DSLRs with the live view option rarely, if ever, use it. I think it's a feature that, I don't know if it did come out slightly before mirrorless became big on the earlier cameras.
The 40D. Actually, yeah. As I recall, the EOS 40D was one of the first cameras, DSLRs, with live view, and that predated mirrorless cameras. And I remember using it with my telescope, which, if you ever do any astrophotography with a telescope, you'll know that one of the hardest things to do is focus the darn things.
Yeah.
And the ability to magnify that view on the sensor. I even filmed a little video on it. That's on YouTube. It's 4x3. It predated 16x9. Video cameras. Now, I get comments on them still to this day. Why did you film this in standard definition, you idiot? Because, of course, that's what you've got to do in YouTube commenting. As indeed you know, Doug, from your the pricing debacle of our previous Nikon D500 video. They're very kind, YouTube commenters. Some of them are very nice. Most of them are very nice. Some of them are not. Why did you film it in standard definition, you idiot? Why is it in 4x3? This is 2016. And I'll just calmly reply, look at the date. You'll see I filmed it in 2006 when there were no high-definition cameras. In fact, it predates even DSLRs filming video. You know, why didn't you film it with your Canon 5D Mark, whatever? It wasn't out. It wasn't out yet, you know? But have a look at this. You'll see my telescope. That was when I lived in New Zealand. And it's just so easy to focus on things like the moon. So, yeah, it was the 40D that brought us that feature. So for the YouTube rant there.
That's okay. I'm just reminding myself to make sure we have a link to that video in our show notes so you'll be able to find it. But to answer the question, how often do you think the typical ADD user is likely to actually use live view for still pictures? Do you think it's going to be that common?
No, I don't think it's that common. It should be because it's got a very nice live view experience. And as we'll show you later on, it has a fully articulated touchscreen. So that's nice. very nice, but I think most people will be using it in live view to film movies. And I think you're right that most people, when they're shooting stills, will be using the viewfinder. The exception, I think, maybe is for a pretty serious landscape or long exposure photographers who are on a tripod, and like I was doing today. And remind me to talk to you about long exposures, because I was doing some last week with the ATD, I'll tell you about. When you're on a tripod, I would always recommend switching to live view, because you can be absolutely certain that what you want is in focus is in focus. And I should also say that you can preview certain effects. Now, I was shooting with the ATD. I've had it for 2 weeks prior to filming this video with you. And I was shooting with it a lot in some situations where I wanted to shoot in black and white. Now, I'm so used to shooting with mirrorless cameras that when I switch them into black and white, you, of course, see it through the viewfinder. You see it all through the viewfinder because it's electronic. But, of course, when you're shooting with a DSLR through the optical viewfinder in black and white, you don't see it. Suddenly the world does not turn into black and white. It stays in color, and you have to guess what it looks like. Now, you could fire up live view and use the screen, which I would do if I was on a tripod. But when you're shooting kind of street-type, fast-moving scenarios, or it's very, very bright and you can't see the screen very clearly, you go to the viewfinder. But you can't preview how the black and white or extra saturated or a retro effect is going to look through the viewfinder. You have to take it, check your picture, and it does slow you down. And it really reminded me, because I'm so used to shooting with different effects on mirrorless cameras, that I've got so used to previewing that as I compose through the electronic viewfinder. You know, I always say to people, there's pros and cons to both technologies. And one of the great pros of electronic composition is you get to see what you're going to shoot in terms of color or lack of color. Now, the Canon isn't shooting completely blind. There is a little icon flashes up, says, you know you're in black and white mode. You know you're shooting in black and white, don't you? I'm not going to show you it, but you know you're shooting in black and white. So it does tell you that something's going on, because that could be the other scenario where you've put it in black and white mode and forgotten about it, and you're merrily shooting in real life color, only to find out your pictures are black and white. Obviously, if you're shooting in RAW as well, you've got the chance to retrieve the color information. But if you're shooting JPEGs, they're going to be black and white.
It's the same as using a rangefinder camera and not realizing you've got the lens cap on.
Exactly. I did that all the time. I used to have a Mamiya 7.2 medium format camera. It was 7x6cm frames, 10 frames per roll of 120 film. And I can guarantee that 2 out of those 10 frames had a lens cap on. Another 2 had my finger in front of the lens. And then the rest were completely squint because I could not hold the camera straight. So even though I loved the quality of that camera, I just could not use it.
Well, very good. So, all right, good transition time here. I want you to show us that fully articulating screen. And before you do that, give us a little tour of the controls on this camera. So controls, articulating screen, and then from there, let's go into video.
Okay, now, it's quite interesting at this point, because I also have, in my other hand here, I should have a glamorous assistant. I have an EOS 760D or Rebel T6S, I think it is. But anyway, this is the next model below the ATD. And they're actually quite similar. Now, the ATD has an LCD information panel on the top. That's one of the things that says, hey, I'm not a normal Rebel camera. But yet on the 760D, they did put an LCD information screen on the top. It's not as detailed as the one in the ATD, but it does have one. The other thing that normally differentiates the ATD from the lower-end Rebels is it has a control wheel on the back. Admittedly, not as chunky or big as you would find on the 7D or the 1DX series, but it's still quite nice. However, on the 760D, they also put one on. It's pretty small. It's more like one of the point-and-shoot wheels, but it does have a wheel on it nonetheless. So, you know, there's quite a few blurrings between these two models. If you hold them next to each other, you'll see that the ATD is taller. That is pretty much down to the fact that it has a pentaprism viewfinder as opposed to a pentamirror viewfinder on the Rebel. This is one of the big differences that remains between these series. And what it allows pentaprism or a pentamirror do in a DSLR is it bounces the light from the lens off, basically out the viewfinder on the back. That's what it does. But what the pentaprism lets you do is achieve a bigger, brighter image with greater coverage, but at the consequence of having a larger piece of glass on the top of your body. So that's why they're heavier and taller and bigger. When you compare these two bodies next to each other, you'll see that the viewfinder image on the ATD is much larger. It's much nicer to look through the viewfinder of this than it is with a Rebel camera. Canon has slightly improved the coverage. It now offers 100% coverage through the viewfinder, compared to, I think it was 98% on the 70D. If you're comparing specs with the D7200, you'll see that it also, and the previous generation, offered 100% coverage. Ooh, I've still got it in live view. Let's turn that off. Both offer 100% coverage. You'll notice that the viewfinder magnification on the Nikon is fractionally smaller than the Canon, but the Canon sensor is fractionally smaller than the Nikon's. Remember the 1.6 versus 1.5? So when you actually hold them both to your eyes and do a comparison, I love doing that. It really freaks people out. Watch this. How are you doing? Look at that. And you've got to also realize that your eyes are different. So you have to swap it around before you make any judgments. You will see that the viewfinder image on these two cameras is almost exactly the same size. But the reason I keep going on about this is that, again, one of the benefits of electronic composition on a camera of around this price point, if you're using a mirrorless camera, is the viewfinder image is huge in comparison. If you've got a Fuji X-T1 or a Sony A7 or an Olympus EM1 or even an EM5 Mark II, their viewfinder images are much bigger than you get on the 80D. You asked me about the controls. So we've got a rear wheel. You've got a front dial, as you would expect from a camera of this class. You've got an upper LCD panel with shooting information on it. This can, of course, be replicated on the rear of the screen if you want. And as we have mentioned, the thing that makes this camera really special is the screen is fully articulated. It will come out. It will twist around to any angle. It's great for me because I can shoot in portrait at low or high angles. You can face it back to yourself to do self-portraits. You can flip it back on itself there for protection. And this is one of the major benefits this camera has over the Nikon D7200, because its screen is fixed in place. It does not move and is not touch sensitive either. Here's another interesting specification. This is for people who read the spec sheets and go onto the forums and go, oh, it's got a 0.1 inch difference, therefore it's better. Not necessarily. You have to actually use these things to really notice some of the differences. Now, the Nikon screen is 3.2 inches, okay? The Canon screen is 3 inches. Therefore, the Nikon screen is better, right? Not necessarily. The Nikon screen, the shape of it is 4x3. The shape of the Canon screen is 3x2. The shape of the images both these cameras takes is 3x2. That means they fill the screen on the Canon, but they're displayed on the Nikon with a thin black bar along the bottom. Now, Nikon doesn't waste that. It uses it for shooting information, which Canon has to superimpose on top. But the bottom line is that the actual active image area is roughly the same size and with roughly the same number of pixels devoted to it. So, you know, it's important to weigh up these specs because people may look at the Nikon with a 3.2-inch screen and assume that it's delivering a bigger image. It does not.
So,
ooh, yeah, connectivity. Connectivity. They both cameras have microphone and headphone jacks. This is an upgrade on the 80D over the 70D. The 70D did not have a headphone jack. Now you have it on the 80D. So that's, again, bringing it in line with the Nikon and also giving you a nice little upgrade over the 70D.
You know, we never did mention yet the fact of the price. In the US, this is roughly $1,200. In the UK, for the body only. In the UK, it's about what?
It's £700.
Okay.
Oh, no, sorry. It's £900.
Okay.
Take that, YouTubers, before you criticize me for getting the price wrong.
£900 body only? Is that right?
£900 body only for the 80D, which is about £200 more than the 70D. At the time that we made this video, the 70D was about £200 cheaper for the body. Or the 70D with a lens was roughly the same price as the 80D body alone.
Gee, I guess the pound isn't worth what it used to be worth.
What was it worth anything?
But why we're on video, so a $1,200 camera that shoots video, in the mirrorless world, you're going to get 4K video for that amount of money. And yet this camera is 1080p only.
Yes.
Does that surprise you a bit?
No, because it's Canon. And Canon, so far, have not committed to 4K on its non-cinema cameras. It sees 4K officially as a professional high-end cinema requirement. It's something that if you're shooting with one of its cinema cameras, you'll be shooting in 4K. But if you're shooting with one of its consumer cameras, you're not going to want 4K. Obviously, the 1DX Mark II has it, but that kind of replaces, it merges and replaces one of the cinema products. Personally speaking, I think Canon, actually most people at Canon wished that the engineers would equip them with 4K because they are beginning to look a bit old-fashioned in this respect. I mean, you don't need to spend anywhere near this amount of money on a mirrorless cam with 4K simply because Panasonic is plowing ahead and equipping pretty much all of its cameras with 4K video, even its point-and-shoot cameras. So, you know, at a tenth of the price of the EOS 80D, you can get 4K on a little camera or on an interchangeable camera, lens camera for about half the price. I mean, look at the Lumix G7 or the GX80, GX85. They're much cheaper. They all do 4K. I should say, in Canon's defense, that dual pixel CMOS AF, this was another gotcha. On the 70D, dual pixel CMOS AF only worked up to 30p at 1080 30p, and it needed quite new lenses. Now, the 7D Mark II came along. It also had dual pixel CMOS AF, and it had 60p, but not with dual pixel CMOS AF. Again, the limit was 30p. With the 80D, Canon now lets you do dual pixel CMOS AF, so that's the nice movie focusing, all the way up to 1080 60p. Thanks for that. And it now works with a full range of Canon lenses, not just the new ones. So in Canon's warped world, this is an upgrade. It has moved on. But, you know, for a camera where its predecessors had a shelf life of about 3 years, 2 to 3 years, you know, we're in 2016 now, so a camera that in 2018 will still be current, I would expect, for it not to have 4K. I mean, even Nikon, there's no 4K on the D7200. And again, actually, the D7200, here's another interesting gotcha. It will only do 1080 up to 30p with the full DX frame. If you want to shoot 50 or 60p, you have to apply 1.3 times crop. So, you know, the Canon is looking pretty strong movie-wise compared to the D7200. But you only have to look at a Sony A6300, which offers full 4K on the full frame with very good movie focusing, or any number of Panasonic's cameras. You know, it's if resolution is important to you for video, then Canon's kind of dropped the ball a little bit. And it's a dangerous move, in my opinion, a very risky move, considering the typical lifespan of this type of camera.
I mean, there was a time when we didn't even review the video capabilities of still cameras. And there was also a tipping point at which, you know, simple standard definition was not sufficient. You had to have it HD, 1080p of some sort. I think, especially given the push from the mirrorless side of things, that we're pretty much at the point where 4K video is about to become a checklist item, that you're going to have 4K video. And I think the DSLR guys are going to have to step it up if they want to be able to compete, because, you know, I don't own a 4K television, but I do own a 4K Mac. And I just think this is going to become pretty important moving down the road.
Yeah, the other thing you'll find is typically on the cameras that do have 4K, they capture it in a different way to how they capture 1080. Typically what we've seen is 1080 is captured with the whole sensor width that's then scaled down, whereas 4K generally takes a crop that applies some magnification or field reduction, but with a kind of cleaner result. So it's giving you a choice. You know, it lets you choose whether to do it one way or the other way. And as we've seen with Panasonic, they've taken the 4K ball and really run with it and gone, hey, we can really grab photos from this. We can do lots of clever stuff with our image processor. So yeah, even if you don't need 4K video footage, there's so much things you can do with it. That's neat. Before I forget, Doug, I really have to say that although Canon has had its eye on the D7200, there are a couple of things that the D7200 does that the 80D doesn't do. And these are pretty important. The first is that if I open the compartment on the side of the D7200, you will see that it has twin SD memory card slots. If you want that on a Canon, you're going to have to get 7D Mark II. Okay, that is a nice feature. The D7200, Nikon also makes some claims over its degree of weather sealing. It says it has it. Canon doesn't make any environmental claims that I know of, anyway, for the 80D. Unless it does something odd, what it did previously is it says it's equivalent to one of its old film SLRs, like an EOS 1N or something. And everyone goes, what? What? Really? Is that good or bad? Was the EOS 1N famous for being weather resistant or not? So it's a bit confusing. So the Nikon gives the impression of being a bit tougher. It has the dual memory card slots. Both have 24 megapixel sensors, but the Nikon one does not have a low pass filter. And when you compare the results, yes, there is a little more visible moiré rate on the Nikon files. You know, on my standard test scene, there's some very fine grills and you can see it kicking off a little bit. Doesn't bother me. but the images are a little bit crisper as a result. You know, they really are. So in terms of like still shooting, it does 9 frame AEB bracketing as well, whereas the Canon only does 7. 7 should be enough, but you begin to sort of form this opinion that maybe the D7200 is more of a stills photographer's camera. It's more kind of, it's got a couple of extra things that still photographers will go, oh yeah, that's nice. Whereas the Canon doesn't quite match it in some of those respects. It's pretty subtle, but then the Canon surges ahead with its kind of hybrid nature with the articulated touchscreen. You can pull focus by tapping the touchscreen. I mean, these are things that Nikon can only dream of, which segues us nicely into the fact that Canon's lenses, many of them also offer very quiet and smooth focusing for movies, whereas Nikon still don't. Nikons are quite audible. So it's not just the Nikon sensor that is a problem for movie and live UAF, it's its lens AF is also a problem. Whereas Canon's resolved that. And that leads us on to
a new zoom lens available for this camera. It's $1,600 with this lens. This is the new 18-135.
Yes.
So this is $400 US additional for this this lens. I think there was, in your written review, I think I read that there was an 18-135 previously.
Yeah, the model I have here, for anyone watching the video, mounted on the 80D here, is the old EFS 18-135mm f3.5-5.6 IS-STM. STM means it's Canon's smoother and quieter focusing system for movies and live view. Now, unfortunately, STM is great for movies, but it's not quite as quick as USM, which is its other focusing technology, is for, you know, tracking fast action. It's a kind of compromise. So Canon has developed a new lens. Now, it is the same focal length, 18-135mm. It's the same focal ratio, f3.5-5.6. It also has image stabilization. And if you compare the optical construction of these lenses, they appear to be identical. But there is one important difference, and that is, instead of STM at the end, it says USM. It has a new focusing motor called a nano USM motor that Canon's developed, and it reckons that it is roughly 2 to 4 times faster than STM for normal focusing, you know, when you're focusing action through the optical viewfinder, but it maintains the smoothness and the quietness when you're autofocusing in live view and movies. So again, it's this great hybrid lens. And it does a special trick, doesn't it, Doug?
It does. I'll let you tell us about the special trick.
The special trick is that it works with a brand new accessory that Canon has brought out called the PZE1. Have I got that right?
Yes, the PZ-E1, which is a $149 new gadget.
It looks like a big tripod plate. It clips below the lens, and it actually has a gear that turns the zoom ring at two different speeds. It's got a rocker switch on it. Two different speeds, and it gives you a powered zoom. I mean, all it's doing is actually just turning a gear that turns the zoom ring. But it does it in a motorized way. And again, it does it at two speeds. The nice thing about that is that you get smooth zooming, which you don't know when you're filming movies, which normally you wouldn't get with the DSLR lens, or in fact with any lens that isn't motorized. You know, I mean, this is a benefit that a lot of point and shoot compacts have over interchangeable lens cameras, is the ability to have a motorized zoom. On compacts, if you've, especially on the ones with 30 to 40 times zooms, when you are using that motorized zoom, you don't half see the image wobble from side to side as those elements, you know, go all over the place, and it's not a consistent speed. I've used the PZE1 accessory and the new lens on the 80D. And we've got a video to show you this in action. And it does turn it very smoothly. It is really nice. There's definitely a very notable benefit over the motorized zoom of a point-and-shoot camera. And, of course, with the very quick and effective and smooth continuous autofocusing, it will maintain focus as it zooms through the range. And here's the clever bit. Now, you might be going, wait a minute. Does this attach to the lens or the camera? And the answer is it attaches to the lens, which means you could, in fact, put that lens and accessory on any Canon body and enjoy a motorized zoom. But here's the thing. The EOS 80D has some additional electrical contacts with that lens and accessory, and it passes through the camera into the Wi-Fi system. I should add, this camera now has NFC as well as Wi-Fi. And what it lets you do is, if you're in the Canon app on your smartphone, on your Android or iOS smartphone, you actually have a little zoom lever on it, like as if you're operating one of their point-and-shoot cameras. And lo and behold, you can actually operate the motorized zoom by Wi-Fi remote control. That, I believe, is only possible if you mount that lens and accessory on the 80D. If you mount it on any other Canon EOS DSLR, you do not get the remote control powered zoom, but you still get the rocker switch, and it still offers the two speeds. So this is something that, again, you know, you might think, well, that's a bit naff, or I'm not that interested in that. But, you know, people who film, you know, you film video, a motorized zoom is actually on a camera with a large sensor is actually a really nice thing to have.
You know, coming from the world of cinematography many, many years ago, the one thing that I miss from something like this is the ability to set the widest and tightest zoom points and have it basically to program it to go from wide to tight, but not overshoot, not to go beyond that.
And to decelerate and accelerate.
Yeah, to be able to have, I mean, ideally you could set the curve and you could control that. But even without that, just be able to say zoom from here to here. This is, again, for video production where you're actually planning a shot and so forth. But this PZE1 looks like a pretty nice gadget.
Yeah, now it's important to note that there are powered zooms for other systems as well. Sony has an 18 to 200 millimeter E-mount lens, I think, that has a powered zoom on it. No one talks about it anymore, but there are a handful out there, but it does give the Canon system something different. Now, you look at this accessory, which has cost you $150, and you think, well, can I use that on any other lens? Well, not yet, not on any existing lens, because none of them have the gears in the right place. It's not the right circumference or diameter. So you begin to think, will this work on any lenses in the future? And the answer is, I don't know. I asked Canon, they don't know. I would sincerely hope that, you know, when they are designing some new lenses, EFS lenses, that they do try and make the barrel the same diameter and that they do put the zoom ring in the same place so that it will drive them. Because otherwise it's going to be a bit unfortunate if it only ends up working with one lens, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But that's quite a constraint on the lens designers to say it must be in this position in this diameter. We're going to have to wrap up soon, but I want to remember to get you back to talking about the long exposure capability on this camera.
Yes, and before I talk about that, I want to mention one more thing about the Camera Connect app on your smartphone. Now, this is another big difference between Canon and Nikon. Nikon's Wi-Fi remote control in the D7200 is extremely basic. There is no exposure control remotely. You can just basically view the image, tap to refocus and take the picture. That's about it. With the Canon, you've got full exposure control, which is great. You can even manually focus it by nudging it back and forth using little icons on your smartphone, which is great. But one thing that is bizarre on Canon's implementation, and I'm still trying to get to the bottom of it, and I will for my full review at Camera Lab. So if I get it wrong, forgive me. Do cross-reference my written review. As far as I understand it, Canon does not allow you to do GPS location logging on its smartphone app for EOS DSLRs, but it does for its compacts, and they share the same app now. It's the same app whether you're using a point-and-shoot compact like a PowerShot or an Ixus or an Elf, and it's the same app if you're using the EOS DSLRs. But the location logging bit disappears when you connect it to a DSLR. Maybe they're trying to sell you the GPS accessory. I don't know. Maybe something else is going on. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. But if I've got this right and they disable that for DSLRs just to sell an accessory, that's tight. I'm not impressed with that. But I may be wrong, so do check my review. But I didn't find any way when using the 80D or the 1300D, which is their entry-level model, to do GPS logging on it. Anyway, one thing that is very nice in terms of long exposures that I noticed is that it has a bulb timer. I don't think it's a new feature necessarily, but I used it a lot. I didn't have a cable release for it, and the smartphone remote control is not great for doing long exposures. So what I ended up doing was using the bulb timer. I used a self timer to trigger it without touching the camera, and then you can basically tell the camera when to close the shutter after a minute, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever. So I did some nice 4 minute long exposures with this with the 80D in Glasgow, and you'll see in Scotland there's some lovely pictures from around the bridge that goes over the River Clyde that you can see in my review, and we'll hopefully share a couple of those on the All About the Gear page as well. So the long exposure capability was actually quite nice on it.
Very good. Okay, we've covered this pretty well. I think it's time to go to the comparison segment of our show and say, all right, let's look at what else is out there roughly in this category, which is crop sensor APS-C cameras in the $1,000 to $1,200 range. So we've talked a lot about the Nikon D7200, which has been out for a while. It's about $100 less expensive, so virtually the same. Spent a lot of time on that. The Sony A6300, $1,000. So slightly cheaper.
Actually, Doug, for the benefit of those watching the video, I have the old A6000, but externally it looks exactly the same. So I always like to do this, right? Here is the EOS 80D in one hand and the A6000 pretending to be the A6300 in my other hand. Let me show you really what these look like.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Different lenses, so let's be fair.
Different lenses, but just look at the bodies. I mean,
yeah. You're the hand holding the Canon is shaking. It's so heavy.
that's the effect of the coffee. Now, you know, there's more to hold on the Canon. It's more comfortable, especially if you've got bigger hands, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is that you can get an APS-C sensor in a body that does very fast autofocusing, faster continuous shooting, 4K video with autofocus, electronic viewfinder with a bigger image, blah, blah, blah. You know, it doesn't have a touch screen. It's not a fully articulated screen, but that Sony A6300 has got great autofocus, 4K video, and it's small and it's light. And the video quality is great.
I love,
it's 24 megapixel APS-C.
I love that theory about the Canon, though, which is, oh, dear, you're not fat. There's just more of you to love.
There is. And look, all of the stuff you love on this camera is on the side. Here, look at that. I mean, that is a nice, big, chunky grip. It's, it's a nice camera to hold on to. But I tell you what, I was carrying the 80D and the D7200 into Brighton today to do a lot of side-by-side shooting with them. And the whole time I was thinking, you know, when I'm testing mirrorless cameras and I take an Olympus and a Panasonic and a Sony out, my bag is so much lighter and it's so much nicer to carry around. And I carry a lighter tripod with these. I had to carry a bigger, heavier tripod. Some people like the heft.
It makes them feel better. You know, it's like, I must be a good photographer. I have a big, heavy camera. Wait, all right, let's not go into that rant. We've done that before. I want to also mention, though, in the APS-C world, Fujifilm, virtually all their cameras, or if not all of them, are APS-C sensors. And it's not a new camera, but the X-T1 comes in at about $1,000. That's a pretty nice camera.
Yeah, massive viewfinder image. And again, one of the nice things that an electronic viewfinder can do that an optical one can't, when you turn it to the side to compose and portrait, Fujifilm turns the shooting information on its side as well. So it remains upright. Little things like that.
You don't have to go like this to read what's on the screen. There you go. But the last one I want to just make sure we compare to, we've talked about it a fair amount, is the Canon 7D Mark II. It's a 20 megapixel sensor, same physical size, but not quite the resolution. 10 frames a second instead of 7. And it's currently $300 more expensive, which is not a whole lot. By the time you start buying lenses and invest in the Canon ecosystem, why would you buy the 80D versus the 7D Mark II?
Okay, so the 7D Mark II, as you say, slightly lower resolution, shoots slightly faster, 10 instead of 7 frames per second. It has a 65-point all-cross type AF system compared to 45 on the 70D, so it's slightly more sophisticated AF system. Here are the differences, right? Now, it becomes really interesting when you realize or when you find out that the EOS 7D Mark II also has dual-pixel CMOS AF, which means it can do that really fast and confident and smooth autofocusing in movie and movies and live view. The key difference, though, is that the 80D lets you do it at 1080 60p or 50p, whereas on the 7D Mark II and the 70D, it was limited, that dual pixel CMOS AF was limited to 30p. So you get that higher frame rate. And also on the 7D Mark II, it only works on newer lenses, whereas on the 80D, it works on all lenses. The more important, more obvious difference is that the 80D has a fully articulated screen that is also touch sensitive, right? So you can touch to pull focus, and it works so well on the 80D and the 70D. But the 7D Mark II cannot do that. It has a fixed screen, and it is not touch sensitive. There is another important difference. The 7D Mark II has a built-in GPS hardware in its head, which is nice, especially as I'm finding it a challenge to find a way to embed GPS coordinates within Canon's system on the ATD. But the ATD has Wi-Fi, right? So you can remote control it and transfer images. You cannot do that, unforgivably. You cannot do that on the 7D Mark II. It does not have Wi-Fi built in. The 7D Mark II, however, is faster. It's got slightly better AF. It has dual memory card slots, and it has tougher build and weatherproofing. And as you say, it's currently, at the time we made this video, because it is an older body, the ATD is still very new, so it's not been discounted yet. There is only about $300 difference between them. So you've got to think really carefully here if you're thinking about the ATD. You've got to think, am I going to use that fully articulated screen? Am I going to use the touch capabilities of that screen? Is it important to have the movie AF at 60p, or am I only ever going to film at 24, 25, and 30p? Do I need Wi-Fi? Or is GPS, you know, will I make use of the GPS hardware? And once you answer those questions, you work out which one is going to actually be more important to you, which one is going to be more relevant. But yeah, the 7D Mark II is looking like an interesting option. And coming underneath the 80D is the 70D, a few hundred dollars cheaper. Again, it does a lot that the 80D does. We've talked about it throughout the video. I mean, it's 20 megapixels, same as 7D Mark II. It will only do dual pixel CMOS AF up to 30p. So what? It doesn't have a headphone jack, whereas the 7D Mark II and the 80D do have. It has a more basic AF system, but that doesn't work very well in low light. But, you know, it's got most of it at a lower price. And then there's the D7200 that kind of comes, I guess, with its dual memory card slots and slightly tougher build, weatherproofing, that sort of thing. It's a more confident stills camera, maybe a little bit more, but it lacks that movie capability. So there's lots around the same point. And then if you're not wedded to an optical viewfinder, there's the whole world of mirrorless to consider, especially if you want 4K.
Yeah. Gordon, you're amazing. I don't know how you keep all these specs straight for all these camera models. I have, you know, pages and pages of notes that I have to keep for every time we do these shows. It's amazing. Anyway,
I make it up and hope no one catches me.
Yeah, but you on this show, with the number of viewers we have, you know that any slightest mistake you're going to get nailed for. Absolutely.
Yeah, we know that.
The audience is watching, as they say. Okay. I want to remind everybody that if you want to learn even more about the 80D Mark II or any of the cameras we review here on All About the Gear, head on over to cameralabs.com, because if you think this is a detailed review, you ain't seen nothing yet. You got to see what Gordon does in writing. Get yourself a beer or a wine, because you're going to have a lot to read, but everything you ever wanted to know and more about these cameras. And if you're
go on. That's the important bit coming
okay.
up.
Okay. And if you're interested in purchasing any of the gear that we review here, also head on over to cameralabs.com. Click on the buy now links from your favorite retailer, no matter where they are in the world. It helps us put food on the table. What were you going to say, Gordon?
I was going to ask you, Doug, now that I've briefed you about the ATD, and you were the one that actually came to me about the 7D Mark II as well originally, what would be your gut feeling? What would you get if it was between the ATD and the 7D Mark II?
I've never held the ATD. I've the 70D I've used and the 7D. I like the slightly. I know it's the opposite of what we go for mirrorless, but I like the solid feeling of the 7D. To me, it's just it feels a little better to me. So, but I haven't touched the 80D. I haven't seen one.
Well, it doesn't quite feel as solid as a 7D Mark II. And like I say, the 7D Mark II is designed as a more serious kind of working pros camera. It's faster. It feels more confident. You've got the dual memory card slots and things. I mean, for me, because I don't bat the camera around and drop it and use it as an offensive weapon, I do like the articulated screen on the 80D. I do love having that touch capability. And for pulling focus in movies, yeah, I do actually do that quite a lot. But it is a really interesting one to compare.
Yeah, I don't shoot video, never. So
maybe if you had it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I have an iPhone for video. What else do I need? But I think that's the difference. To me, it's a still camera. As a still camera, I think I'm guessing that if I had them side by side, I'd still like the 7D. If video was important to me, I think the 80D would probably win out because. Primarily because of that fully articulating touchscreen. Those are the things. I mean, for me, a good video camera needs a fully articulating screen. So that's the big difference.
Would you miss not having Wi-Fi on the 7D?
Not a bit.
Obviously, you can add it with a module, or even with an iFi card, of course.
I'm almost never using Wi-Fi with my cameras, and that's not true. It's in a whole nother show. Don't get me started. But the fact is that Wi-Fi is generally not at all important to me. So
I use it all the time,
yeah,
to transfer images to my phone, to share them, partly because I don't do any post-processing. I don't need to get them on my computer. So I get a thrill out of sharing them from the location, pretty much. And it means I'm going through them at the time. So for me, Wi-Fi is dead important. And I really missed not having it built in to the 7D Mark II, because as a consequence, when I was doing that review, I shared very few images from it until the review was finished. Whereas when I'm reviewing other cameras, you'll see that on my Instagram and Twitter, at Camera Labs, if you want to follow me on that, you'll see I'm constantly sharing pictures from these cameras as I take them, because it's so easy to share them with. The 7D Mark II, I found it hard.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. You and I are completely the opposite, because I will typically shoot for a whole day and not even look at the images until I get them back into the computer. It's more of a film-like experience, you know, that something it's worth the wait. They have to mature, you know, they get better with age and so forth. All right.
Like ourselves, Doug. Like ourselves.
Exactly. That's at least that's my theory. I'm sticking to it. Gordon, thanks again for another great review. We look forward to seeing you back here again on another episode of All About the Gear. Bye-bye.